Hello and welcome aboard. It is the podcast formerly known as Prince, and now is Share the Candy. With friends and strangers, today is a stranger to me, but he won't be for long. He is author James Swan, and his book is 101 Things I Hate About Your House. I don't know if there's that many I hate about my house, but there are a few. He's brought to us by RadioGuestList.com, who does not pay me anything. They just send me a bunch of emails requesting that I say that at the beginning, you know, or parts of this because, you know, yeah, whatever. A Snickers bar wouldn't hurt every now and then. But we also have a little fun part that we did a couple weeks ago. We had a phone call. We also had, me and Chris had someone call and do a fun, like, beat me at five questions trivia game for a prize, which in fact is a Share the Candy t-shirt, which I haven't even designed yet. So if someone out there can draw, please send us a design. If your design, you know, wins, just draw something, scan it, email it to us. We'll put it on shirts. You will win a free shirt. We'll go to your house, cook you dinner, you know, do some laundry. It'll be fun. I think that's it. Thanks for listening. Today's guest on Share the Candy is author James Swan. He's written the book 101 Things I Hate About Your House. First, I'll just start by saying thanks for being a guest today, James. And I'll put the ball in your court and say, your background, and then why did you write a book about this?
Happy to be with you, Colby. Thank you so much for the invitation, and always happy to talk about the book. So. A little bit of background for me. I've spent the last almost 20 years doing high-end residential interior design in almost every corner of the country. Been fortunate to work with some amazing clients who've allowed us to sort of stretch the boundaries of what beautiful living is all about. But at the end of the day, I've also seen and experienced a lot. And over dinner one night a couple of years ago, friends challenged me about, well, so when are you going to do your book? You know, your big coffee table book filled with lots of color photographs. And I really honestly responded that I wasn't really interested in doing that kind of a book. I really was wanting to do something a little more unusual, a little more unexpected, maybe a little more fun. Because, I don't know, I think a lot of people in my industry, while the industry is important, I think they take what we do a little too seriously, and they don't have nearly as much fun as they should in creating beautiful living environments for people. So I threw out just as sort of a throwaway idea that I would do a book titled 101 Things I Hate About Your House, and fast forward now 3 years later, the book is published, it's on bookshelves around the country, and I'm now promoting it every chance I get.
I'm sorry, how long did you say the book's been out for? Like 3 years?
It took me quite a while to write it. I was still trying to run a business while I was writing a book, and that, as it turns out, is a much more full-time proposition than anybody lets you know.
Right.
We hit bookshelves late May of this year.
Oh, okay.
So we're just now coming up on 5.5-6 months that the book has been out.
Oh, cool.
And so lots of great momentum building. We've got the holidays ahead of us. It makes a wonderful gift for giving. So we're seeing a lot of activity and people picking that up and buying multiple copies and preparing to give them to friends for the holidays.
Right. Now, one question I have is with this book, are most of these examples that obviously you've seen going into houses that people wanted you to redecorate, or are they just basically, are they problems that you fixed, or just problems that you've, like, you know, encountered through other people's work or something like that?
Well, you know, I think it's a mix, Colby, quite honestly. I mean, when I sat down to write the book, I made a list of things that I hate that I've seen over the years, and it went much beyond just 101 things. It was a really, really long list.
Right.
And so we trimmed those things back, and we decided to find the ones that resonated with the most people, because at the end of the day, we're all the same. We all live pretty much the same way. We make the same mistakes in our homes that our neighbor does, or our best friend, or our brother, or our sister. And so I think these are a collection of faux pas that people experience in living in their homes that are common to pretty much everybody. And hopefully we're able to supply really simple but really creative and exciting ideas for people to make that living experience just a little more gracious and a little more beautiful.
Right. Are there any one thing that just kind of pops up to my head? Because I've lived in my house now for about a year and a half, and when we moved in, I should maybe send you some photos because it was awful. They had I can't think of it now. Not the plywood, but the paneling, wood paneling.
Oh.
When did that really take off? Like the '70s or the '60s?
Actually, a little earlier. That became very popular initially back in the 1950s.
Wow. Okay.
We have a developer on Long Island whose name is going to escape me right now, but he's actually in the book that we have to thank for that. He spearheaded a whole different way of living, introduced the family room concept,
right,
and created this sort of stylized, dark paneled, shag carpeted experience that was quite the rage back in the day. And as you point out, we still feel the ramifications.
I just can't believe that was ever like really popular. But I guess you kind of have to be in the times to understand it. But in any case, when we first moved in, they had put that directly over the studs and the insulation.
Oh, my God.
And I told my dad this, I was like, you know, before we bought the house, cause I was like, if we have to rip, we're going to rip it down anyways. And I can drywall and all that. So no problem there. But
right.
I told my dad before we bought the house, I was like, you know, when they were showing us the house, I did a little inspections. I pushed up against certain parts of the wall and it gave a little bit, like in between the studs. And I told my dad, I was like, I don't think there's drywall or anything behind it. And he's like, no, that's not, people wouldn't do that. sure enough, we pull back that paneling and they put it right over the studs. So we've fixed it and all since then. But that's one of those things where when I first saw the title of your book, I was like, you know, I think I have a little list I could kind of add. Even though it's maybe not as much, mine, I think, was more just the composition of the house on a, you know, on the structure, not as much as like interior design, but, yeah, wood paneling also has that look to it where it's, I don't know, it's kind of creepy as well, but,
it kind of has that dark, you know, the basement kind of a feel to it.
Yeah.
Not the best for beautiful living, actually.
Yeah. Are there any, before, maybe I'll have you go through some parts of your book, but one thing I want to bring up maybe is, are there any current trends? So we'll kind of use that as a segue there.
Okay.
So, you know, like I said, I can't imagine how wood paneling and all that would be really popular to use, but let's jump forward to today. Are there any trends that you know of today that people are using that, you know, in maybe 5, 10, 20 years, people are just going to shake their head and be like, why did they ever put this in their home?
You know, I believe there are things that people are doing today that will, and it happens in every decade. You know, I can go back to the 80s and I can talk about mauve lacquered kitchen cabinets and people know immediately that I'm talking about. Or if I go back a generation before that, when I was a kid, when appliances were avocado green and harvest gold, it pigeonholes us in a sort of a time warp. And so I think there are things that people fall into because they look good, they're popular because my neighbor has it and my cousin has it, so I want to have it. That doesn't mean that they're bad.
Right.
But I do think that there are trends that in 15 or 20 years, people will look back and say, oh, wow, you know, that kitchen was installed in, you know, 2011, 2012, or thereabouts.
Right.
Again, it doesn't make them bad, but it does sort of clue us in to what people are responding to in a very, very positive way. And then you, then as a homeowner, you can decide, well, I want to buy into that, and I want to have my house look, you know, like everybody else's, which is a very legitimate way of doing it. It's very safe. You feel sort of, you know, like you're wearing a pretty new outfit to school. It's a good, safe feeling. You know, people are admiring what you've done. There's no controversy around it. But another way to go is to be a trendsetter, and that would be to maybe buck some of the systems and explore new products and be someone who's leading the parade instead of following the parade. And I have clients over the years that have fallen into both categories, and both categories are very, very valid for people. I think the important thing is just to make a clear, very conscious decision, you know, that I'm, okay, this is very popular right now, and I really like it, so I'm buying into it, and I'm going to love it for as long as it's popular, but the reality is someday, if I still am in the house, I'm going to probably change it, or I'll probably feel like I want to change it. So it's just having those conscious decisions, they're so important to me, help people to make those decisions wisely so that they can enjoy living with the decisions that they've made in their home for many, many years. Because goodness knows, in our economy today, people aren't selling and moving from home to home the way they were for a while there.
Right. And then do you also think that, well, obviously, you know, decisions that homeowners make now, do you think that, like, for example, let's say, you know, when Pergo or whatever came out, and people, you know, I used to work at Home Depot. So for a while there, when people were buying it the most, it was the most popular, you know, people would fill up their minivans and drive off with like pallets full of it. I just wonder with things like that, and how I remember how some of them were just horrible looking. Do you think when new people are, you know, going in to buy a house, if they see a house full of that, do you think that's going to scare them away? And basically what my question I think boils down to is, you know, the decisions that homeowners make to decorate their houses, they may make those choices because they like it for that house. But do you think that it potentially hurts the chances of selling the house? You know, because not everyone's going to walk in and say, hey, this, you know, this may not look good anymore, but I can fix it. Do you think that some, you know what I mean? Like, they get discouraged by choices made by others.
No, that's a really important question you raise. And I think you have to answer a question first as a homeowner. And that question is, what are your intentions regarding the house? How long do you plan on living in it?
Right.
If you've bought a place, and your intention is to fix it up and make it as appealing in today's market as possible, put it on the market, and then move on, then I think your decisions are impacted by that guiding directive. You're going to want to make selections for products that go into the house that are extremely popular with buyers today, that people are going to respond to, can't live without, and because you want the sale. But if you're going to be in the house as a place to live for the foreseeable future without a plan to resell it, then I think you get to be much more egocentric. The decisions get to be much more about who you are and the things that you are excited about. And if you want to paint that, you know, your dining room a beautiful shade of, you know, I don't know, apricot or pumpkin, which can be a really beautiful color for a dining room walls, then go for it. Absolutely. And enjoy that color on your dining room wall every single day that you live in that house. And don't be quite so worried about, well, what if a prospective buyer doesn't like my color choice?
Right.
You know, if that really isn't the intention, then by all means, love the house that you're in and fill that house with things that make you and your family happy. Because otherwise, what's the point?
Right.
It's your home. You need to enjoy it. And I think people do make the mistake of always making design decisions based on the possibility of a buyer coming in. You know, I love our real estate agents. They're wonderful professionals at what they do, but they also are very, very conservative. And so when a new homeowner is thinking, well, I really want to paint that wall, you know, like that pale green. Well, you're right. Somebody may not like that pale green. But if my client's going to live in that house for the next 3 or 5 or 7 or 10 years, then quite honestly, I don't really give a rat's ass what a prospective buyer might like when it comes to the color on that wall.
Right.
I want my client to be happy and to be jazzed about coming into that room and feel all those really positive things that you can feel when you walk into a room that's beautifully decorated. And if that means green on the walls, then you know what? We're going to put green on the walls.
Right. Maybe we'll talk, maybe if you want to go over some points in the book that you wanted to highlight, we can do that now.
Sure. Well, I thought I might read a little bit from the introduction, sort of sets up where the book starts and some of the things that we try to accomplish with the book. So I'll just start at the beginning, and then we can maybe jump around the book a little bit.
Okay.
A disconcerting look, a gasp, or a simple catch in the throat were the common responses I received from my friends when they heard the title of this book, 101 Things I Hate About Your House. Some people would nervously laugh and ask with trepidation, is my house in there? Or, more rarely, they would say defensively, my house better not be in there, as if they had thrown down a great gauntlet and they were preparing for a bloody duel. I would usually pause for effect and reply as though searching for some redemption from a particular decorating transgression. No, not necessarily. And my response was true enough, though admittedly a little vague. Its ambiguity either marked a sustainable truth, as in, what were they thinking with that shag sofa? Or it conveyed my mood, which most likely was dependent on whether on the day of the week, the direction of the wind, or whether my new jeans made my ass look fat. Someone once gave me this bit of wisdom. The act of creating is fueled by the total of life experience. Truth, regardless of how we come to it, is just that. It's truth. So, in an indirect way, every room I've ever entered, looked at, dreamt of, or ran screaming from has influenced this book. But instead of a gossipy storytelling or a kiss and decorate mentality, this book will provide you with my keen observations and bits of learning gleaned from years of study, practice, and mistakes I've made while pursuing the art of beautiful living. Unless anyone take this book, me, or themselves too seriously, please know that as much as I love the work that I do, I also understand that no lives will be saved by my fabric selection, and no wars averted as a result of a deftly shaded lamp. So that's where how the book starts off.
Okay. And then, is there like a now? How many chapters are there in the book?
Well, what we've done is we set out on a walking tour of the house, Colby. So we start at the front door.
Okay.
And we walk all the way through all the major rooms of the house, the entry hall, powder room, the living room, the dining room, kitchen, family room, library, all the different bedrooms, libraries, home office. And we end up back on the mud porch, which people have you're in California, aren't you?
Well, the phone number that we used, I use like the Google phone out of Gmail.
Oh, okay.
Saves on the phone bill. So we're actually out of Portland, Oregon, but I've been told that it shows up somewhere down in California. Yeah. So.
Okay. Well, I wasn't sure, but you know, mud rooms are much more prevalent, I think, in the north and in the east. I grew up in California, and growing up, I never knew what a mud room was. But anyway, that's how the book is laid out. So we tour the entire house room by room, and we actually hit 101 different problem areas, and we talk about them, laugh about them, and then we hope encourage and energize people to roll up their sleeves and to make the small changes that they need to make things a little bit better, a little more beautiful in their own home.
Right. What would you say? So I like that approach to the book, though. You know, you like you said, you're walking through a house and you basically, you know, break apart each part of the house as its own element and talk about it. What would you say? And this is a very, I guess, a subjective question for everybody. But what would you say is the most important, you know, room in the house or part of the house? Like if you ask, you know, 100 people, what would be the most popular response? You know, maybe your own response as well.
Well, I think if we talk to people in general and ask the most popular favorite room of the house, I think most people would say the kitchen. People perceive the kitchen as the heart of the house. It's where the family gathers for meals, for homework. Usually there's a family room of some sort that you spill over into so the TV's going or video games or whatever's happening. It's become sort of the central focal point of most homes. So people pay a lot of attention to kitchens in when they think about homes. I don't know that I would say it's the most important room, but in thinking about creating a beautiful and gracious home to live in and to invite friends into to experience, I would argue that the most important room is the first room that they see when they come in, which for most homes, be they big or small, is some sort of an entry hall.
Right.
Because it's in that moment, those first 8 or 10 seconds, when a guest steps across the threshold and into your home, that you set the tone for everything else that comes after that.
Right.
Be it the kitchen, the living room, the dining room. So you have, let's say, 10 seconds to make an impression on guests who are coming into your home for the first time. To me, that means we should spend a lot of time thinking about and getting those 10 seconds as right as we possibly can, and then everything else will follow after that.
Right.
So I put a lot of importance on the entry hall.
That's a good answer. I would think too, maybe I was thinking it would go maybe living room and then kitchen, but you are right. The kitchen's very important, but the first room that someone sees when they walk in, that is, I think, the best answer. That's good.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no. You go right ahead.
And then maybe we'll take those two. We'll take the kitchen and then the first, you know, like the entryway or entry room, or maybe some places you walk in is like the living room or whatever. What would you say is, you know, some of the most common mistakes or maybe some of the better things even that people can do to, you know, improve those areas?
Well, the entry hall, I think are simple things that any homeowner can do to make that experience as impactful as possible. One is just to eliminate clutter. I can't tell you how many homes that I walk into, and regardless of the furniture you see, you've got kids' backpacks and briefcases and purses and 4 weeks' worth of help, you know, stacked everywhere, falling on the floor. The dogs have drugged their bed or their pillow in the middle of the room. It's just a bit of a disaster. So I think the first thing that I would encourage people to do is just to eliminate as much clutter as possible. Find a place in your home for the kids' backpacks, for your briefcase, for your purse, for all of the accoutrements that go into daily living, and put them away. Just put them away. Just cleaning up the space will carry a room far down the road towards a better look and a prettier presentation. Lighting is hugely important. I can't tell you how many times I walk into a home or an apartment, whatever the situation, and you've got ceiling cans blaring on high. You've got a chandelier with no bulbs, no shades on the light bulbs, and you've got 3 or 4 lamps sitting around the room, and the room is lit like a stadium.
Right.
It's just so overly lit. A, nobody looks good in that light, me in particular. I need all the help I can get at this point in my life. So I want to bring that light level down. I want to see dimmers put on all the wall switches so that those overhead lights can be dimmed down and controlled. Doing something as simple as putting a clip-on shade on the little chandelier bulbs on a chandelier can diffuse that light and create a much softer, better-looking room, let alone better-looking people in the room. So lighting is a huge, important thing. And then what is, if we just think about all the senses, what are we looking at? What are we listening to? Are we hearing the kids screaming upstairs? Are we hearing the dogs chasing the cat through the family room? Or might we hear, you know, strains of beautiful music being played? Whatever your taste in music is, it could be something classical, it could be jazz, it could be anything, but something that's thoughtful and well considered to greet your guests with.
I want to leave.
And then from hearing, what is it that we're smelling? You know, are we still catching whiffs of the kids' gym bags and nasty old tennis shoes, or a cat box that hasn't been cleaned out for weeks? Or have we just taken the time to light a candle, a scented candle, or put a bowl of potpourri out so that the room is filled with enticing aroma?
Right.
And those are just some really, really simple things that anybody can do. It doesn't cost a lot of money, doesn't take a lot of time, but it can so enhance the way your house greets guests that are coming in as to change the whole feeling of the evening or the event.
Right. Maybe go on to another part of the book that you really enjoyed writing, or another room that you'd like to design in particular.
Let's see. Where shall we go next? This is a fun. And see this a lot. This is it's a little problem that I have when furniture is shoved up against the wall. Who knew that in 1973 that one little girl, a few gulps of split pea soup, and furniture on wheels would cause such a ruckus? The Exorcist sent people screaming from theaters. People experienced extreme reactions to this movie, some even losing their lunch during screenings. And I believe the horror resulted because of not only the green makeup and spinal contortions and the voice of Satan, but also because of the shockingly violent and ugly reality of furniture slammed up against the walls. The tiniest of spaces notwithstanding, most rooms for living will greatly benefit from pulling furniture away from the walls. Conversations become more natural, guests feel more at ease, and the entire experience of entertaining is enhanced when chairs, settees, and tables are arranged in ways that encourage intimate conversation. A smaller size sofa or settee grouped with two pull-up chairs, two lounge chairs, and a small table tucked on the back side of an angled desk, or two slipper chairs facing each other at the fireplace, all move furniture off the wall and into the flow of great entertaining. Practice by moving your pieces around. There is no place to experience and learn like your own living room. So that was a fun exhibit. And the book is filled with wonderful illustrations by my dear friend Stan Meyer, and we really had a lot of fun putting that illustration together. So
right.
I would encourage your listeners to check that out.
That's a very good point, and I'm totally guilty as charged for doing something like that in a living room. I think it's a real challenge depending on what size of room it is, or like the size of the couch for that matter. I have a sectional that's like the shape of, you know, like an L or whatever. And I put it right in the corner, you know, facing the TV. And I've always thought it'd look better if, you know, we could push furniture out more towards the middle. But I think a lot of people, maybe who don't have, a background in design, or just, you know, good ideas, or basically people don't know what to do. That and maybe laziness. I don't know, one of the two. But no, that's good. That'll kind of make me want to revisit that as like a challenge, and maybe move stuff around.
It's an easy thing to do. I mean, furniture is not so difficult that it can't be moved around.
Right.
But I also encourage people to pick up magazines, you know, off the news racks, and look at how other rooms are furnished. You know, you can sort of gauge. I mean, you can measure your room. So if you know you've got a living room that's, you know, 15 by 15, then can watch in magazines or on television for rooms that appear to be a similar size, and then look at how the furniture is arranged in those, and find your inspiration. You may come up with an interesting idea that you've never considered before just by looking through a magazine or two. And then, you know, invite a buddy over, get somebody to help you lift maybe that one awkward piece of furniture and move things around, and see what you come up with. People are always pleasantly surprised when they try new things with the furniture in their rooms.
Right. Maybe go on to another part of the book, and then I have a question that I got here. Or I'll just ask the question first, I guess.
Okay.
Well, first off, in your background, do you mainly just do like residential homes, or have you ever done like businesses or anything like that?
I have done businesses.
Okay.
Done office for clients. Beyond residence, the thing that we've done the most would be restaurants and hotels. Offices would sort of come in last.
Right. Do you think, because I'm trying to kind of think of your perspective, do you think that businesses and restaurants or hotels would be much more difficult to, design because aren't you trying to, get a result that, you know, you're trying to get everybody to like versus just, you know, your clients of a home?
Wow, that's a really good question. It's different, but it's slightly the same. When you're dealing with a hotel property or a restaurant, you're still dealing with one owner, or maybe there's an owner, a committee or a board that you're working with. But if they've done their homework and if they're approaching their business in a very smart way, they'll be very, very clear about what the result is that they're looking for from hiring you. What is it? So they will know who their market is, who their target market is, what that person likes, what they don't like. They will have done a lot of homework. And so coming into a hospitality project like a hotel or a restaurant, your design brief usually is very clear and very concise. This is the client we're attracting. These are the services we want to provide to them. How are you going to creatively address those needs? In a home, the scenario is while much the same, it's also sort of much more simplified. Rarely have I ever had a residential client take the time to write out a design directive for their home. I usually get to do sort of the deep navigation and the interrogation to pull all of that information out of my clients by asking questions, rummaging around in their closets, you know, trying to piece the pieces together. So while they are somewhat similar, they are different. There's no doubt about that. But both are fun.
And then going back to, you know, people's homes, what would you say is an item, whether it be furniture or, you know, I don't a tip or anything, what would you say is missing from most people's homes? Like something that people overlook, that could, you know, I can imagine every case is different, but in general, is there something that you've discovered that people, you know, don't have that would make, you know, their home more comfortable or just look better?
Well, I think I'll answer that question two ways if I can, because two things pop to mind. One is I think that people, and believe me, I'm taking into account the challenging economic times that we're living in, because we're all impacted by that. But I do think that people skimp on the upholstery that they put into their home. So let's think about sofas in the living room or in the family room.
Right.
These are large ticket items. I understand that. And the idea of getting a deal and spending, you know, much, much less than what you anticipated spending sounds really, really good. But I challenge my clients or anyone that I'm working with when it comes to upholstery, set your budget. Be realistic about what you will spend and never go a penny over that. But then go out and do your homework and find the best value piece for that dollar that you can find. Because the furniture world, there's a huge range of quality. You know, if you tell me I'm going to spend $1,000 on a sofa, I can go out and I can find three different sofas for you that are vastly different in quality, ranging from piss poor, excuse my French, you know, something that's going to fall apart in 5 or 6 months when the kids get their hands on it.
Right.
Up to something that is going to last you for 5, 7, maybe 10 years and maybe even be around long enough for you to reupholster when you move into your next house.
Right.
So, again, whatever your budget is, be clear about that. I would never advocate spending more than what you can spend. And these days, spend cash. But be a smart shopper. Get online. Find out what goes into making a quality sofa so that then when you go into that local retailer, you're armed with the questions. Well, now, is this a hardwood frame? Has this been double doweled? Is this feather down cushions that I'm looking at, or is this synthetic? I mean, there are anywhere from half a dozen to a dozen questions that you can be armed with that will help you determine which sofa you should invest those hard-earned dollars into. So that's a mistake that I see people make a lot. They just buy the cheapest, and they think that that's the best thing to do. And that's
right.
Not always the case.
Right.
And then the other thing, I think people forget why we have occasional tables in the rooms that we live in. Nothing to me is more frustrating than being at an event at a friend's house and, you know, having the evening going great. I'm seeing people that I like. I've got a drink or a glass of wine in my hand, and I'm chatting with friends, and I go to sit down in a chair on a sofa, and I look around, and there's not a table within arm's reach for me to set my drink on.
Right. You have to hold it the whole night, right?
I have to hold it all night, exactly. And it is something that's so simple, and goodness knows you don't have to spend a lot
right.
on little tables to put around the house. But if you're going to have guests in your house, it's the kind of thing that makes a difference between a really relaxing experience and an experience that can be just sort of mildly annoying, because then I got to hold the glass in my lap, and chances are I'm going to spill it at some point. So, and I think it's just a small thing, but I think people overlook it regularly. So I do a sit test, and I challenge my clients to do a sit test. Go and sit in every seat in the house, and just put your arm out and sort of create a radius from that seated position. And if anywhere in that radius you're not finding a table underneath you, then you might want to consider going out and, you know, just pick up a small little occasional table. You can find it at a tag sale or a garage sale. eBay is a great source for some of these things. Just find something to put there. Your guests will be much happier, and you'll look like a much better host than anyone ever would have imagined you to be by taking care of those little details.
Right. Is there another part of the book that you wanted to maybe highlight or go over that you enjoyed writing?
Oh, I had so much fun with all of it. But, yeah, let's this is from The Dining. It's a little section called Dining. When you can't see the tree, maybe it's time to come. It now seems like a good time to part the Red Sea and walk on water all the time. I want to get your attention. I know there are people out there who, one, believe there's no need for a dining room. Two, know for a fact, presumably, that there's no space for a dining room in their home. For those who believe that the dining room shifts dinosaurs, the status of extinction, allow me one question. Where, actually, you and your family partake of meals? I'm just curious. Possibly you dine in the breakfast room, small space, often adjoining the kitchen. At the kitchen counter, bar stools and all. Or on trays, appropriately labeled for their obvious connection. There are no wrong answers to these questions, but for most responses, But for most responses that I can muster, the following truths still hold. More than one person, these people are gathering to share a nourishing. It is possible and hopeful some form of a communication will be involved. Guests not currently living in the house may share in the experience. Even if your idea of fine dining includes a delivery boy plastic and plastic utensils, allow me to stir your heart and challenge your thinking. If the only consideration presented by the subject was consumption of food, then I would have already designed a standing trough-like apparatus from which families could shovel their food and run. For centuries, Dunkin' provided the opportunity for an experience, prized menu for communication, education, illumination, negotiation, all of which have advanced the human race in ways we cannot easily ignore. By diminishing the of your daily dining experience to that of swallow and bath, you're depriving yourself and your family a large part of the excitement and satisfaction of life. If you're going to do the dance, you might as well plan on dancing, don't you think? So I'm big on dining.
Right. Yeah. That's really good. What is something in a dining room do you think that people, what's something that could improve like a dining room if someone is on a limited budget or anything like that that you've seen missing from your experience?
Really, really great question and one that for me is easy to answer. I think one of the greatest and most painful mistakes people make with dining rooms is buying uncomfortable dining chairs. Wood seated chairs, while not always terribly uncomfortable, are also can be, I don't know that I want to sit and linger over a great conversation and a couple of glasses of wine in a really rigid, uncomfortable wooden dining chair.
Right.
I would much rather be in a beautifully upholstered chair. Now, if beautifully upholstered chairs aren't possible for you, I'll bet at least seat cushions on those wooden dining chairs are a possibility. You can run out to Pupon Imports, pick up a whole variety of seat cushions you can attach to dining chairs, or you can make them. But to me, it shutters up my spine and makes me want to reach for the speed dial to call my chiropractor when I see those really stiff wooden dining chairs in the dining room, because it just spells discomfort.
Right. Let's see. Is there anything else that you wanted to maybe bring apart or, take from the book that you also find important?
There's a theme that runs through the book that maybe we can just talk about a little bit. There is a mentality, I think, in our homes these days. I call it two things. One of the skills that I think people are losing when it comes to their home is the ability to edit and to sift through all the many things that go in a room or on a tabletop or on a bookcase and to edit out the things that are important and make the decision feature a few good things that are important. So I'm constantly challenging friends and clients to edit and sift through things. I use the three rule that on any surface in a home, a table, a bookshelf, a coffee table, that if you think in terms of three primary items, a lamp, a photograph, and a stack of books, or a framed photograph, a grouping of candlesticks, and maybe a beautiful vase of flowers. But if you use the concept of three, and as soon as you start getting more than three items or types of items on any vertical surface in the house, chances are you're moving in the direction of clutter.
Right.
And clutter is the greatest killer of beautiful rooms. There's no greater killer out there than clutter. So if I could share just a tip with everybody who's listening tonight, think about eliminating clutter from your rooms, and you will be amazed at how much better those rooms will look.
Right. There's something I kind of jotted down, just kind of thinking, have you ever seen the show Hoarders?
Oh, yes.
Or heard of it?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. They always bring in, you know, they'll bring in someone to look at it from a, you know, a psychological point of view. And then they'll bring in a family member, you know, saying, hey, we don't want to spend any more time at your place if you don't clean things up. But it seems to me they always forget to bring someone with interior design that could show them, you know, if you do clean this up and, you know, make this look better, you might actually feel happier. I know that kind of ignores the whole psychological element, but I just think that's kind of funny.
No, but I think you raise a really valid point that those feelings of happiness, I believe, come from spaces that are well thought out, beautifully edited, and arranged in pleasing ways. I mean, as humans living in a Western culture, our eyes, over the years of growing up and experiencing our world, become accustomed to certain scale and size relationships. When we look at a wall of furniture or a grouping of anything, when things are arranged and balanced beautifully, we respond, the body responds and is more relaxed, feels more safe, feels that it's easier for us to enjoy ourselves in that environment. And when things are off, when things clash or when things fight against each other, the exact opposite thing happens. So if we're on a search for peace and tranquility, to ignore interiors and how our interiors are arranged, I think is a great mistake.
Right. And I was, you know, doing a little bit of research. I went on, you post quite a bit of good photos on your Facebook of both good designs and bad designs. And, you know, the type of person I am, I kind of focus on, you know, the bad, just because it's a good way to learn what good is. And it's also humorous. I really like the one. It's in the let's see. I think it's in your the Oh No, They Didn't file or folder. And it's the one where there's all the archways and it's all white and they have a mirrored tile.
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome. Is that something that you took or is that just something you found?
That was something we found. It was actually both the interiors of a home. I believe that home was from Oklahoma, if I'm remembering right.
Wow.
And it was a homeowner that did the interiors, and I guess they worked really hard on the door.
I don't think, like, the actual, you know, I think the tile is really the worst. I mean, I think that's probably the focal point of what's wrong with it. But, you know, the shapes I find kind of pleasing. It's just the actual tile that they use to decorate the walls is what ruins it.
No, I agree with you completely there. Those overall shapes were very sort of naturalistic and I think very, very interesting. But then to do that to it, all that mirror.
Right.
It was just sad.
It's kind of, yeah, it has like a, you know, like a modest dwelling type look, or, you know, bone structure, and then they turn it into a discotheque, like for skin.
Exactly.
So, well, right on. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you please go ahead.
Oh, maybe just we'll go over a couple things that, you know, you'd like to, you know, put out there. There's obviously the book, 101 yeah. Things I Hate About Your House. What's the best way that people can get a copy of that?
Couple of different ways, all of them very easy. One, your local bookstore. If they don't have it, they can order it for you very quickly. If you're a purchaser of books online, you can go to barnesandnoble.com. They are our online partner with the book. We're also available on Amazon. Or you can go to 101thingsihateaboutyourhouse.com, which is our website, where you can also purchase the book. So any three of those avenues will bring the book into your hands fairly quickly and very easily.
Great. And I encourage, I think you can find a link from your website or from Twitter to the some of the Facebook photos, because some of them are very entertaining.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun on Facebook. I post every morning a small article with an accompanying group of pictures. You can find us there at James Swan and 101 Things I Hate About Your House. Take a look at what we do there. Like us. Join in the conversation. It's a real fun, interactive experience where a lot of people share their thoughts and ideas. Goodness knows we laugh an awful lot at some of the really crazy things that are done in homes out there.
Right. And then do you have any more, you know, I guess, do you have any plans to write any more books concerning interior design?
You know, we've got a couple of ideas that are brewing. We're also talking to people about taking the book sort of to the next level with television and other media. So stay tuned. You know, if you like us on Facebook and follow us there, or follow us on the website, we'll keep all of our friends and fans posted on those developments as they begin to happen. And as always, we just so appreciate the people that support us. They're just the most creative, funny, witty group of people out there, and I feel honored to have them as a part of my life. So stay tuned for both the next book and the other ways that 101 Things I Hate About Your House may be appearing.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Great.
It was great having you as a guest. You're very informative, and I liked you. I think the parts that you read from the book, you know, you kind of interject, you know, a sense of humor as well as knowledge about your subject. So I liked parts of your book as well.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and to all of your listeners. God bless to everybody.
All right, great. Thank you.
Talk to you later.
All right. Hey, are you still there? What the hell kind of a thank you was that? Thank you. Thank you. I guess I could have edited, but whatever. God, and I wasn't well-spoken at all. It's something I'm discovering. I need to start reading more books, because as time goes on, I'm getting dumber, which is not the direction you want to be going in. All right, so if you made it this far, if you're just for some odd reason you skipped to this part, this is going to be fun. We did this, me and Chris did this a couple weeks ago. We were bored, totally didn't plan a podcast, and didn't really have much to talk about. So we decided at the last minute to, you know, shout out, put out, you know, we just said, hey, if you want to be, you know, interviewed, or if you want to play, actually, no, Chris's idea was, hey, let's do like a quiz game or whatever. So we asked for someone to respond, and, you know, within a couple minutes, we had some people, we picked a number to call, and she ended up winning a t-shirt. So as I mentioned before earlier, we don't have a design for the t-shirt yet. I got a couple drawings, but I am not an artist. So if you are listening and you would like to contribute, which would be awesome, send us a print, which I will screen print onto t-shirts, transfer it and all that. And we'll send you a shirt in turn as well. But I thought it'd be cool if it came from a listener versus, you know, top down. So, here's that thing we didn't air, and this is from a couple weeks ago, so here we go.
Okay, we're gonna call.
Alright.
Hello?
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 Hi,
is Chassie there?
This is her.
Hey, how you doing? This is Chris and Colby with Share the Candy.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good, how are you doing?
Good.
Making some sweet moolah with Uncle Rico.
So, all you gotta do is answer 5 questions against Colby and you get free concert tickets.
Okay.
And if you get 3, you get a mixed CD, and if you get, 4, then you get a free Share the Candy t-shirt.
The easy question?
We don't know. I don't even know how hard or easy they are.
They could be hard. They could be really easy.
We're going to find out together.
Okay. So you guys ready? Now, okay. Also, for you to answer the question, you have to ring in and you have to say your name as your buzzer. So you just say Chastity and, you know, I'll call on you. So, okay. The first question is, which metal do you get from bauxite? Bauxite.
Holy fuck. Man. Which metal do you get from bauxite?
Bauxite.
Colby.
Go Colby.
Copper.
No.
Damn it!
Chastity.
Chastity.
Hey, Chastity, it's not copper, just so you know.
Copper was silver copper?
silver copper. No.
God damn. Do we have to get this before we can move on?
No.
Oh. Bauxite. Bauxite.
If you pass, the prize goes down.
All right, I'll try one more. Colby. Aluminum.
Yeah, that is correct.
That's correct. All right. Fucking A.
Okay, so question number two. Which animal produces the biggest baby?
Chastity. Fuck.
The giraffe.
No.
Colby. The blue whale.
That is correct.
All right.
Question three. In pop music, which two herbs go with parsley and sage?
In what?
In pop music, which two herbs go with parsley and sage?
In...
It's not the fusa.
Which in pop music, which two... Say, read the question one more time.
In pop music.
So it's probably a song.
Which two herbs go with parsley and sage?
Colby. Crimson and clover.
No.
God, I'm out then. I don't know this one. Oh.
Parsley and sage?
Yeah, parsley and sage.
I think I know. I'll let her go first, though. Chastity. This is Chastity.
Rosemary.
That is correct.
Holy shit. Good one. I was going to say salt and pepper.
Okay, question.
Are you keeping score?
Yeah, you got two and she has one.
Okay, right on.
She still has a chance to get a mix CD. And
how many are you asking?
10.
She still has a chance to get a concert ticket.
She does have a chance to get concert tickets.
Though. Yeah.
Okay.
Fuck you. Play with your kid.
Okay, question number five. Who was Leonardo DiCaprio's co-star in the movie Titanic?
Wait, question number four.
Four. Excuse
yeah,
me.
Sorry. Wait, what do I get? Can I win a t-shirt?
You get nothing. Who was Leonardo DiCaprio's co-star in Titanic?
Chastity.
Holy shit.
Kate Winslet.
Yeah.
That is correct. Colby has two. Chastity has two. Okay.
I just didn't want people to know that I knew that.
Right. Question five.
Too.
What sort of creature is a bustard?
Is a bustard. Colby.
Bustard?
Colby.
A baby buzzard.
More specific.
A baby vulture.
No.
A fucked up vulture. A bustard.
No.
Oh, Colby's out. A bustard?
The correct answer is a bird.
Bird. Bird, eagle, same thing.
All right, give it to her.
What?
Yeah, give it to her. 3-2.
3-2.
I like coming from behind, you know what I mean? So it's 3-2, I'm behind. All right, here we go.
All right, what is it, question six?
Yeah, this is 3-2, Chris. This is question five.
You missed one.
No, we didn't miss one. We've answered every single question.
Okay.
Me and Chastity have answered every single question you've thrown at us. We're like a team. We're just playing against each other.
How many holes are there in a 10-pin bowling ball?
A 10?
How many holes are in what?
Are there in a 10-pin bowling ball?
Colby. 3.
That is correct.
Yeah, 3-3 now, sucka.
10-pound bowling ball or 10-pin?
Well, you already answered the question.
I know, I just couldn't hear.
Get them to sign on the line which is dotted.
Okay. Question number, what is this, 7?
This is 6 now. Wait, yeah, because it's 3-3, this is 6.
That's 7. How is that 6?
Oh yeah, this will be question 7.
Okay, let's see if this shit will load. There we go. Who wrote the novel Treasure Island?
Oh.
And you can't be cheating, Chastity. No Google.
Are you on your... Yeah, she's on a... She's on a computer.
Are you on a computer?
No way. I have a phone.
Hey, no asking cha-cha.
No, that takes too long. Really?
Man. Okay, who wrote the novel Treasure Island?
Treasure Island was written by...
I have no clue. I don't read books.
Good.
I don't read. I don't read movies either.
Who the hell reads a movie?
That's what she said.
I'll pass up on this one.
I think I'm gonna pass too.
I want to know how you read a movie.
We're gonna. You need to add another question because we have to get to 10.
Come on now.
Okay. What product was?
Wait. What was that answer, real quick?
Well, I'm not gonna give the answer because I'll use that again.
Oh.
Okay. The answer to that was Robert Louis Stevenson.
Oh, fuck, yeah. Sorry.
Question 8.
Aren't we redoing that? Because no. We need 10. Okay, whatever. No.
What product was first to appear in a UK TV commercial in 1955?
Say that again.
What product was first to appear in a UK TV commercial in 1955?
Fuck you! That's my name!
What product was first to appear in 1955 UK commercial? Let's see. Can I get it? Can we get a hint? Is it a car?
No.
Okay.
Not a. Something you use in your hair.
It's something that you use every day, or at least I hope you use.
Colby.
Every day. Colby.
Toothpaste.
That is correct.
Yes. You know what's really funny? British people are known for having god-awful teeth, so that's hilarious. I wouldn't even think they had toothpaste commercials. I love English women, so no offense.
Yeah.
Game over?
No, you got one question left, and you have a chance still to get, what is it, a t-shirt? Yeah, you still got a chance to get a t-shirt.
Or something else, right?
Or a mixed tea. I mean, she already has a mixed CD.
Oh. Oh, so now we're trying to take stuff away. I've already failed.
Okay, last question of the game. There is no more questions.
There should be one more.
Which chemical element has the shortest name?
Which chemical? Damn, dude. Has the shortest name.
Chastity.
Acid.
No.
Nice.
What kind of acid are you talking about?
I should know this too. Has the shortest name. Colby.
Colby.
Zinc.
New. That's 4. Same as acid.
Well, acid isn't an element. Zinc is. God, how long is it? 2?
It's 3.
It's 3 letters? God, I'm going to feel like an asshole for not knowing this one. Yeah.
That's 4.
Well, as it wasn't a... Oh.
No, I don't even know. I didn't pass by class
either. I don't know. You can just stop playing the music. I think I should know, but I don't know, so unless she knows, let's just...
Does it start with a T?
I just had to hear the last... Yeah, it does start with a T.
She's Googling.
I know.
What does it end with?
Something else.
It's not 10.
Not
10? Actually, it is 10.
Oh, I said 10.
So, let's go to a tiebreaker.
Let's go to a tiebreaker.
You guys have both 4, and this will still win you a T-shirt and a mix CD, or a DVD.
What? A DVD? We don't have a DVD yet.
You can get a bootleg DVD.
We're just gonna.
We'll give you a bootleg.
We have copies of Hook. and Land Before Time 2.
All right, so the last question is, what was the land that Puff the Magic Dragon lived in?
Oh. Wonderland.
No.
I'm not that old.
Puff the Magic Dragon. I have no idea.
Dragonland.
No.
Dragonland. Greenland. Colby, Greenland.
No.
Colby, Marijuanaville.
That is a no. So, okay. Chastity,
Colby,
today,
Amsterdam.
That's not Amsterdam.
Fuck.
Chastity, you have won a t-shirt and a free mix.
How
CD.
Did she get a t-shirt?
Because she got four. Cause you
oh,
her.
Good job, Chastity.
Good job, Chastity. And we will be getting your information over the internet, and we'll be sending that out to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, just Facebook address. We'll mail it, yeah, or something.
And you can also get to us at sharethecandy.com.
Yeah. Can you send a t-shirt via Facebook? Can we just send her a t-shirt via Facebook?
Like a picture of a...
Of a t-shirt. She could print it out and then put it on one of her t-shirts, and then she won.
All right.
Yeah, that sounds
fine. There you go.
All right. You have a good day.
Thank you for playing.
Thank you.
Peace out. Be sure to visit our website for updates at sharethecandy.com. And if you have any questions or comments, or would like to be addressed, email us at sharethecandy@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening. Be sure to spread the word and share the love.